On the we have a on our next presentation, we have partnerships with the San Diego Police Department, Sergeant Jonathan Lowe, Chief Liaison Officer for the Disabled Communities in San Diego, California. And I'm not going to read more about Sergeant Lowe's presentation because I'd love to bring him on so that all of you can hear what he has to share. Please give him a warm, warm round of applause. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon. You guys have been talking about such important things, and I'm going to bore you with the police department. I tell you, it's a boring life, I tell you. Thank you for letting me come here and speak. I wear a few hats on the police department, so just kind of in the way of introductions and background. I've been with the department for 14 years now. My primary duty is actually as a patrol sergeant. I work in the beaches of San Diego. Poor me, right? Mission Beach, La Jolla, Pacific Beach. I have to spend all day at the beach, so it's rough. It's rough. It's terrible. That is my actual primary duty. I'm a patrol sergeant. I have seven officers that work under me, and but I have some auxiliary jobs. I'm also one of the SWAT supervisors. I teach at the police academy, and I wear a lot of hats. But one of the best jobs that I get to do is I'm actually the chief's liaison for the disabled communities, and I think that's actually pretty unique. A unique position. There are some departments I know that have community liaisons, whether it's for the African American community, the Hispanic community, the LGBT community. I don't know many police departments that have a liaison for that represents the disabled community. The good thing about my position is that whether it's an issue of dealing with blind individuals, with the deaf, with physical or cognitive disabilities, they have my number, they have my email address, and they can call me 24/7 and contact me with any issues, any problems, any complaints, any compliments that they might have. And I work directly under the Assistant Chief for Community Relations, and I report directly to Chief Lansdowne, which is the head chief here in San Diego City. So I get to do a lot of different things. If you guys know Loretta Moore, she's a volunteer coordinator for the San Diego Center for the Blind. She's actually the head of our board, our advisory board, and she'll call me up if there's an issue. I remember she called me about a blind person who had gotten arrested. And yes, blind people commit crimes, right? I'm looking around the room. I recognize a couple of you, so I won't point you out, though. I won't point you out. But no, you know, occasionally somebody in a wheelchair will commit a crime, somebody who's blind will commit a crime, in this particular instance, the service dog ended up going to the shelter, and I know that's not what we normally want to do, and I understand that. So because of the community concern, Loretta called me, asked me about it. And obviously I have access to the police records. I can just call the officer up and say, "Hey, what was the situation and why did this happen?" And it was just those particular circumstances where the dog, that was just the last resort. The dog had to go to the shelter. But I get to mitigate that, and I get to explain why certain things happen. So there's no animosity between the police department and the community. And hopefully the community knows that we're out there looking out for them and trying to do the best that we can. So that's my primary position as the liaison officer. I mentioned the board that we have, the advisory board, and I see one of our board members sitting right up front, Charlene. We have what's called the Chief's Advisory Board, and that's a group of community leaders and representatives from the blind community, the deaf community, you know, again, all sorts of disability groups that meet twice a year with Chief Lansdowne, who's number one, and the assistant chief in charge of the community relations. And it's a unique opportunity where they get to sit down and roundtable with the chief of police and say, "Hey, chief, this is what's going on in our community. These are the issues we're having. This is what we'd like your officers to know when they're dealing with our community or they're interacting with us or responding to calls." And it's a great opportunity to just sit down with the chief of police and hear it straight from him what we can do. You know, for example, sometimes they'll just say, hey, we get a lot of people around City College not yielding to pedestrians, you know, and we have folks crossing the street constantly. Can we get an extra patrol? It could be as simple as that. Or it can be as complicated as, hey, your policies need to be updated because the ADA just updated their policies. And then that's my job to take care of that. So it's a very unique opportunity to interface with the chief. We just actually had our meeting Wednesday, and we had a rep from the Easter Seals there. It was his first time there. And he kind of made the comment that, you know, Chief Lansdowne is so serious and so stoic on TV that he didn't expect him to be so funny in person and so personable, which he is. I mean, he's a ball of energy, that guy. So it's a really unique opportunity. So that's part of my position as being the liaison, not only representing you folks and your needs within the city of San Diego, but kind of mediating these meetings with the chief and the community groups. Let me just talk briefly about, everybody's always curious about the training that the officers receive at the academy level and how our officers are trained. So I'll just touch on that really quick. Our police academy in San Diego is a regional academy, and that means all of the various police departments in San Diego County go to the same police academy. Other than CHP, because CHP is a state organization, all the other city police, the deputies, go to a regional academy. It's about 6 months long, 900 hours of instruction for everything, shooting, driving, defensive tactics, you know, law and constitution. So they get 900 hours of training. Of that 900 hours, 11 hours are devoted to disabilities and disability services and interacting with the community. The instructor that teaches that course is actually one of the board members that sits on our chief advisory board. So she's been teaching for a long, long time. She's really well-versed in the community, the different community groups. And so that's just the start. I know 11 hours doesn't seem like a lot, but when you're trying to cram in so much, you know, to a brand new person, teaching them how to be a baby cop, 11 hours is a lot of instruction, let me tell you. But the training doesn't really stop there. What happens is once they graduate from the police academy, they go through what's called phase training, and they have to do at least 4 months of rotations at different stations, different communities, different times, different days off, and different training officers. And then it's really up to the training officers to bring them to the various community groups and organizations that they're going to be servicing for that month. And, for example, I used to be a training officer. I worked in Hillcrest North Park. And so I'd always bring my trainees to Deaf Community Services in Hillcrest and take them up there and say, hey, these are the folks that we're going to be taking care of during this month. You know, you need to be aware of how to interact with somebody who's deaf. What are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to take their police report if they call you for help? You know, how are you supposed to help them? So that's an additional part of the training that our officers get when they're out there. Anytime there's a change in the law, for example, you know, the ADA within the last couple of years redefining service animals, right? And as an organization, as a police department, we get those calls. Businesses will call us, restaurants will call us, or whoever will call us and say, hey, there's somebody bringing an animal in here, and we need to know. We want you to kick them out is usually what the call is, right? Or somebody else who's maybe not even the business owner, you know, getting into an argument with somebody who brings their service animal in. And so the officers will go out there and respond. And generally, it's about education. It's about educating the business owners and educating the people who have no clue what they're talking about what your guys' rights are with your animals. So anytime there is a change in the law that affects all of us, I have the ability, and it's my responsibility, I have the ability to rewrite our policies or make additions to the policies, and it gets sent out to it gets sent off to the officers via email, and then every squad lineup or briefing session where they start their shifts in the morning, the supervisor will read those updates and make sure that everybody understands, you know, what we can and cannot do. So that's kind of how the training continues throughout their careers. A couple other ways we've improved and learned is just trial by fire. And I say fire, I didn't realize. I was going to talk about the wildfires, so that was a good pun. you know, in 2003, 2007, we had those major wildfires in San Diego, right? Scary. And that was our first time, the 2003 Cedar Fire was really our first time doing these mass evacuations and then setting up subsequent mega shelters, right, for everybody who was displaced. And I think for that being our first time, I think we did an okay job. You know, we got most of the people out of there. We took care of them at the shelters a little bit. But we learned a lot from that. There were after action reports and symposiums that I attended where we talked about, well, when we set up these mega shelters, we brought in porta potties, but they all had steps to get up to the porta potty. And what about folks in a wheelchair? You know, they brought in these banks of phones so people could call their loved ones, and yet none of them were TTY capable. Nobody really thought about the fact that, you know, we might have to evacuate folks that are oxygen dependent or their medications have to be refrigerated and we have to set up infirmaries. And so we learned so much just from these disasters and what we can do next time. Hopefully there's no next time, but, you know, next time something like that happens. And the way it affects the police department as well is in the evacuation process. We learned that not everybody watches TV, right? Not everybody can hear the radio. Not everybody knows what's going on. And if we're calling for an evacuation, we really need to go door by door. You know, what if you're dealing with a person who is blind and deaf? How do you communicate with them? How do you tell them that there's an emergency? And because of what came out of those symposiums and the suggestions by our board, you know, we have policies for that. And we've trained our police officers how to be more efficient and be effective when we're talking about those evacuations. Speaking of evacuations, and I think Charlene participated in that statewide drill. Charlene, did you do that, the Golden Phoenix? So in 2010, the police department participated in a statewide disaster drill that was called Operation Golden Phoenix. You may have heard about it. And there were several hospitals that took place, officers of emergency management that participated. And what we did was we filled up the San Diego Center for the Blind with as many volunteers and clients and not just blind folks, but folks in wheelchairs and folks with cognitive disorders and autistic folks. And we filled it. And then we made our officers respond and evacuate everybody and try to, you know, and a lot of these officers have never guided anybody before. And it was a great learning experience to not only in guiding, but loading people onto buses, strapping down wheelchairs in buses, which is what, you know, part of what we're required to do, right? And then once you get to the destination, disembarking everybody and trying to work their way into that mega shelter that they would normally be placed in. So we participated in Golden Phoenix. It was a great learning experience, again, for those officers that participated in, and the firefighters that came in as well. With service animals, I kind of mentioned already, I talked about it a little bit, you know, narrowing that definition for dogs and all the exceptions in the miniature horses and all that. That is something that all of our officers know about. Again, anytime we change policies or laws, all the officers get it via email. They get it in their briefings and in their lineups. And I would say no officer really has an excuse for not knowing what the proper procedures are. And just so you all know, in terms of service animals, if somebody does get arrested or let's say they have to go to the hospital, well, I guess their dog could go with them to the hospital. But if you go to jail, I hope none of you do. But if you go to jail, no, I'm just kidding. If you do end up at or somebody you know comes with us to jail, the service animals aren't allowed in jail. And so we will find, it's basically the preference of the owner who we will turn that service animal over to, whether it's the family member, a neighbor, if it's the original agency that trained that animal. We will do everything possible to keep that animal out of the shelter. But sometimes we can't get a hold of anybody or the person is being uncooperative and they just won't provide any information to us, then we have, you know, no other option sometimes but to do the shelter. So again, that's kind of a last resort. But just so you know, we work diligently to take care of those animals. Another thing that was brought to our attention because of the board was folks in wheelchairs. And this is something that I don't think a lot of agencies are doing. And there's agencies out there that are getting sued, obviously, for not doing the right thing. I mentioned before that folks in wheelchairs also commit crimes, right? And we never really had a way to take somebody to jail in a wheelchair. I mean, it seems silly because there's so many transportation companies out there, but a lot of times if the person couldn't transfer, they ended up going to the hospital and maybe just getting a warrant put out for their arrest instead of going to jail. But because of some of the suggestions from our board, I was able to contract with TLC. It's a company in San Diego that works 24/7, and TLC will come out for us, and of course the department pays for it, to transport anybody who can't transfer out of the wheelchair. The easiest way to take somebody is if they can transfer and it's safe for them to do so health-wise, we'll transfer them to the police car. But we have people that are in motorized wheelchairs, right, that weigh three times more than I do. And those things aren't going in the trunk of my car, right? So those are the occasions when we'll call out TLC. It's very funny. I had a guy who was a habitual shoplifter in a motorized wheelchair because he knew that anytime he got caught, he would just... The officers couldn't do anything because all they could do is write him a ticket and hope that he showed up to court. And I put this policy into place, and about a month into it, he got caught again. And not only did he get caught, but he had like three warrants for previous cases that he's not showing up on because nobody can force him into jail. And he was ever so surprised when the wheelchair van pulled up. You know, if you want equality, then you can go to jail just as equally about anybody else, right? So it works both ways, right? So it was a process, but we got him into jail, and hopefully that will discourage him from shoplifting again. With the electric wheelchairs, and just so you kind of understand, I'm from the San Diego Police Department, and I don't have any doings with the jail because that's the sheriff's department, but the sheriffs do not accept electric wheelchairs in the jail. They have to transfer somebody to a regular wheelchair, and somebody has to help them be mobile. And what we have to do is we have to get the person to the jail in the wheelchair van, transfer them in the infirmary at jail, and then we have to hold on to their electric wheelchair at the police department for when they get out. And then, of course, he called in a complaint when he got out of jail because he had no way to get to headquarters to get his electric wheelchair. And I had to turn around and say, well, don't shoplift and you won't be in that position. I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't mean to make light of it. But, if you don't commit a crime, then you wouldn't be in this position. But, that is another concern. I don't want to leave anybody out on the street because they don't have access to their equipment now. Most canes and walkers and things like that can go to jail. Real basic wheelchairs, or hand-driven or wheelchairs, manual wheelchairs can go if there's not a lot of hiding spots, but the electric wheelchairs, for whatever reason, jail doesn't accept them, and there's nothing I can do about that, but that is just what it is. So... But that equality is it'll come around and bite you, right? If you don't. So, no, but at any rate, those are just some of the examples of what our board has done for the police department in terms of interacting with the community, the education for the officers, and honestly, changing policy within the San Diego Police Department and how our officers interact with folks and. What we can do to have equal access out there. Just kind of a plug for that. If any of you are interested, if you're community leaders in your groups, and you're interested in either participating or just kind of getting more information, I'll leave some of my cards behind, or you can talk to Charlene, 'cause she knows all about it. And or if you just have any issues, you have questions, you want to know, hey, this happened to my cousin's brother's uncle, you know, did the cops do the right thing? I don't know. I can certainly try to answer that stuff for you, and that's why I'm here. Like I said, I think it's a pretty unique system that we have going on with San Diego PD having a liaison. So take advantage of me. Call me 24/7. I don't care. I might not answer. I might call you back if I'm asleep, but I will get back to you. And just understand also that this is within just the city of San Diego. You know, El Cajon, I have no control over Chula Vista, sheriffs, the jail. I don't know. I can't control that. But I might be able to lead you to the right person. But I'm the only disabilities liaison that I know about in the county. So I'll just leave it at that. So I have a couple minutes. So if anybody has any questions.
Hi, Eric Calhoun. I have been in San Diego many, many times here, especially to go visit my aunt, which I'm doing. The biggest question I have with regard to beach patrolling is the act of asking for money and or loitering with the intent to beg. Have you had anyone under any circumstances with regard to people when they try to go purchase an item, they will go ahead and, you know, stand over the person and just constantly hassle them? And what do you guys do about those type of people, especially with someone who's got a disability?
Well, disability or not, I mean, first of all, there's no secret we have a lot of homeless people in San Diego. It's bright, it's sunny, we have great weather, so they take advantage of it too, right? The last count that we had, and I only know this because the chief mentioned it the other day, is we have upwards of 8,000 homeless individuals in San Diego, more than San Francisco, which is like 7,200, but they're all concentrated in San Francisco. With the issue of panhandling and solicitation, if the person is just politely, I'll just use that word loosely, but politely asking for money, and you deny them and they walk away, then there's no crime there. But we do have a statute on the books called aggressive panhandling. And of course aggressive can be a subjective term. But if you are the victim of somebody who is, if you say no and they keep persisting and they follow you, or they, let's say you're at a stoplight and you've got somebody on the median, which is a popular place to be sometimes in San Diego, and they start kicking or hitting the car or spitting on the car, then that's more than just asking for a quarter, right? So there is a aggressive panhandling statute on the book where if somebody calls in, and because it's an infraction or misdemeanor, the victim person has to be willing to place the suspect under citizen's arrest, if that makes sense, and kind of testify on your own behalf, because the police officer didn't witness it. You know, we can't just give somebody a ticket just because you say it happened. You have to be kind of willing to go to court to back it up. So there is that. Does that answer your question? Okay. Yes.
My microphone. There it is.
There you go.
I wanted to ask you about the issue of pedestrian interactions with cars or potential interactions. That I know I myself have felt sometimes that police officers were, you know, saying, well, you know, you're out of the crosswalk. Sorry, sir. You make crosswalks so I can perceive. I'll stay in them. But I have some of my friends who've actually been involved in accidents say that the police seem to have the attitude that a blind person is automatically at fault. And it's almost like, well, you're blind. You shouldn't be out there by yourself anyway. Do you have a reaction to that?
Yeah, I hope that's not the attitude, and I don't really see that a lot. I mean, if anything, pedestrians usually have the right of way. I mean, granted, I work in Pacific Beach, so don't take it with a grain of salt. I got people dashing across the street every other day, but pedestrians, by and large, have the right of way, whether they have the green light or not. If they're already in the roadway, and I'm not even. Forget about being blind or low vision or having an animal with you or a white cane. If you're in the street and you're occupying the lane or you're occupying the crosswalk, cars just can't run you down just because, you know, you're in their way. So I would say the fault, if there was a collision, the fault usually falls upon the vehicle because they have an obligation because they can kill somebody versus, you know, you might put a dent in their car. However, there are, you know, times where we see people, and I know it wouldn't be you folks, but there are people who just dash across the street or jump out between cars and the car's not expecting it. That's a completely different issue. But any time that, you know, especially those with animals or white canes, you have the right of way, and you know that. And we do have officers, and especially those motorcycle officers, they're vicious, right? So they look out for, they really do look out for that kind of thing. And I remember when, Charlene, what was it? We had a camp, the white cane safety campaign, and we kind of partnered with that last year. Where we put the memo out to all the police officers to, hey, this is White Cane Safety Week or month or day or whatever it was. And we really paid attention to that sort of thing. And we had flyers to pass out to drivers, too. Even just on a normal traffic stop, hey, they just ran a stop sign. We gave them these white cane flyers as well as a part of the education. Charlene, did you?
Yeah, thank you.
What I was going to add is one day, one time in conjunction with the White Cane, we were actually in the downtown area and crossing streets and just having a high police presence, allowing motorists to make their mistakes.
Yeah.
Thank you. We have 3 minutes left, so if we could take that last question.
This is Donna Sanchez. I'm not from San Diego.
I'm sorry.
But so am I.
Okay. Hi, you might be from a good area. I don't know.
But my question is,
I need
does your police department have a... when there's an emergency, do you have a place where blind or any handicapped person can go to and say, I am a handicapped person, and if there's an emergency, you need to come and rescue me?
We actually do. Within the county, it's called Ready San Diego, or Ready SD. Where you can self-register. Of course, it's voluntary because not everybody's going to want to register because they think the government's watching them. But that's why some people wear tinfoil on their heads, right? But there is that website where you can register your cell phone information so you get alerts however you want to get alerts, whether it's text, voicemail, email. And you put notes on there saying, you know, if there's a disaster and my area needs to be evacuated, this is how I want to be alerted. And you can I think type in those whatever special needs you might have, whether it's, you know, I'm in a wheelchair and I'm going to need help driving out of there because I don't have a car, somebody needs to pick me up. Because that was honestly one of the biggest issues during the wildfire evacuations. We'd come upon folks in wheelchairs, and you know, the officer can only throw you in the back of the car, and hopefully your wheelchair's light enough to put it in the trunk. What we were really educating folks out there about was, in terms of disaster preparedness, it's really on the individual to make sure your neighbors know, you know, make sure your family knows that there if there is an evacuation, hey, somebody lead the fire department to my house, or tell the officers, make sure I'm out, and my two cats, because I love my two cats, right, and my medication. And so we were really kind of putting it back on folks to make sure you have that good connection in your community with your neighbors, your family, your loved ones. But there is that Ready San Diego website where you can register, let us know that you're there, and we'll make special arrangements to make ensure that that person got out.
Thank you very much. Everyone join me in thanking Sergeant Lowe. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for being with us today. Yeah. Okay, folks, our general session has ended for today. Hope to see you at committee meetings, President's Dinner, or the session this evening. Thank you.